Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television and our WisconsinVote.org website staff are in La Crosse today. Good morning, La Crosse. And good morning to listeners who are with us statewide and beyond. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our Wisconsin Vote on the Road tour is traveling the state to check in on what is on voters' minds as we approach Election Day. We were in Wausau last week. We will be in Green Bay next week. We are in La Crosse today, broadcasting from Hackberry's Bistro above the People's Food Co-op. Come on down if you're in the neighborhood. You can join in our discussion on some of the state and national issues that are making news on the campaign trail. We will also review the news of the week in our next hour. In this first segment during this hour, we are going to talk about some of the regional races and issues that are of statewide interest that are going on here in the La Crosse area. And I'd be happy to know if you are happy with your representation in Congress and in the state legislature. What are the issues regionally that are important to you? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. And if you happen to be here with our on-location audience and you'd like to join in anytime throughout this hour or next, just raise your hand and one of our producers, Chris Molina or Brianne Chasso, will come over to you with a microphone. All right, let's welcome our first guest. Hope Kerwin is with us. She is Wisconsin Public Radio's reporter in La Crosse. Hi, Hope. Thanks for being here.
Hi, happy to be here.
Let's start with La Crosse is in the 3rd Congressional District, which has been represented by Democratic U.S. Representative Ron Kind since 1997. He is running unopposed in November, so essentially he's been reelected, right?
Right. He did have a challenger in the primary out of Eau Claire, someone who ran as a Bernie Democrat this year. But, yeah, he's running unopposed as far as the general election.
What was going on with this primary challenge? It was someone saying that Ron Kind wasn't progressive enough?
Right. And it was someone who was just, kind of in favor of the Bernie movement. I mean, this was back when Bernie Sanders was still, obviously a candidate for the Democratic nominee. And, just saying he wasn't liberally leaning enough. But Ron Kind really pretty safely came in with that primary.
Yeah, apparently he won that primary with nearly 90% of the vote. So Ron Kind is a pretty popular congressman in this district.
Yeah, he's definitely very well known and, seems to do a good job of getting out there and getting in front of people. It's worked for him so far.
Well, Kind is the chairman of the Centrist New Democrat Coalition. He's ranked by GovTrack as the 4th most conservative Democrat in the House of Representatives. What issues is Ron Kind known for?
Well, right now I think he is, definitely catching a lot of attention for his, support of the Trans-Pacific Partnership and that trade deal. Obviously that's a pretty contentious issue nationwide, and, he's in favor of trade. But, I think that maybe has a lot to do with, a lot of agriculture groups also being in favor of trade, really feeling like that could open up a new market for them. And so I think that right now, that's probably what he's maybe most known for in the state.
I know, Hope, that you're working on a feature based on Ron Kind's lack of opposition in the 3rd District to kind of look at why there are not very many competitive congressional races in Wisconsin. Why is that?
Right. So, this whole thing started from, a conversation I was having with the chair of the Republican Party in the 3rd Congressional District, and I asked him point blank why there was no Republican challenger to Ron Kind, and he attributed it to redistricting. He said that the way the district lines are drawn currently, that any Republican who went up against Ron Kind wouldn't stand a chance. Redistricting has definitely made the 3rd Congressional District more Democratic leaning. It took a section of that was previously part of the 3rd Congressional right along the river, gave it to the 7th District, Sean Duffy, and added in Portage County, Stevens Stevens Point area, which is traditionally a very Democratic-leaning area, to Ronkind. So, I mean, it's definitely made the 3rd Congressional District more Democratic and essentially a safe bet for Ronkind.
Yeah. I don't mean to put you on the spot, Hope, but is there still talk among Democrats, perhaps, that Ronkind would make a good candidate for governor?
I think there is definitely talk and quiet conversations going on. You know, I recently asked Ronkind if a gubernatorial race was in his future. You know, he said that he really likes to focus on the race at hand.
That's what they all say.
Of course it is. Of course it is. But, you know, I don't think anyone's ruled it out.
There's also a closely watched state Senate race here in this area. It's the 32nd district. It includes La Crosse and areas south of the city. This race is between Democratic Senator Jennifer Schilling, who is the Senate Democratic leader, and former Republican Senator Dan Kopanky. Dan Kopanky was defeated by Jennifer Schilling in a recall election. So what's going on here?
Right. So it's definitely you know, an interesting race, an interesting rematch. I asked you know, I recently asked Jen Schilling what she, you know, thought of it, and she said it's a little bit like Back to the Future. And yeah, Dan Kopanky held the seat for 6 years before he was recalled in 2011 over his support for Act 10, obviously the contentious bill that took away public employees' right to collectively bargain. So he was recalled, and he lost that recall election to Jennifer Schilling. And so this is him kind of returning back to claim his old seat, and we'll see, you know, how it goes. It's definitely a competitive race.
Yeah, I was going to say, is there any indication that that this district, the 32nd district, is more Democratic than Republican-leaning?
So I talked with, you know, some political science professors, and, you know, they say the district definitely tends to lean a little more Democratic during presidential years, and in the gubernatorial years and the off years, tends to lean a little bit more Republican. So, you know, if history is an indication, we would say, you know, it might be a little bit more Democratic this year, but, you know, I think that Dan Kopanky's presence is a bit of a wild card.
Yeah. And what seems to be the top issues in that race, the 32nd district?
Well, I have seen an ad come out, from a party in Washington against Jennifer Schilling, really, you know, criticizing her for her support of Obamacare and you know, healthcare stance. But, you know, I think that the big issues in this area are transportation funding. You know, a lot of people really want to see these roads in our area, more rural roads, that don't necessarily receive a lot of attention, you know, monetarily. They really want to see funding for those come in, and there's a big disagreement, obviously, about where that funding should come from. And I think that public education, K-12 education, is another big issue here. There have been several school districts in our area, both rural and more urban, more suburban, that have, you know, reported the fact that they are seeing less and less teachers applying for jobs at their school districts. Now, whether that's, you know, teachers getting to be a little bit more choosy about where they apply because there is a bit of a shortage, or, you know, whether it's the fact that we don't have enough public school teachers in our area, you know, it's definitely concerning them.
I understand we have a member in our audience here on location at Hackberry's Bistro who has an issue you'd like to present.
I'm concerned about environmental issues, and I don't hear it mentioned very often at all, which disturbs me. I think climate change and nuclear issues are two things that will overpower everything else. If they're not dealt with, nothing else will matter. I'm very proud of La Crosse for being a sustainable community, both the city and the county. We have Gunderson Lutheran Healthcare Center, which is energy neutral. And part of the reason is from energy saving. Part of it is using methane gases and things that come from our landfill. our landfill is a real model for the country in reusing, recycling, and there's beautiful hiking trails, believe it or not, in a landfill.
I need to jump in because we're almost up to our news break, but thank you for bringing up environmental issues. Are they coming up in the local races at all?
Yeah, I think we are seeing them come up a little bit in actually the 96th Assembly race. So that is Representative Lee Nearson, but you know, Alicia Leinberger, she is the owner of a green power company in Viroqua, and you know, she definitely has talked about, you know, sustainability issues, environmental issues in our area, specifically frac sand mining, I know, is something that she's passionate about. So that's definitely coming up in that race.
And we have less than 30 seconds to go. There is the 94th District. Very briefly, who's running there?
Yeah, that's Representative Steve Doyle and Julian Bradley, who is a Republican challenger, pretty active in our area.
You'll be watching those. Thanks, Hope, very much. We will talk about some national issues, issues making news on the campaign trail, after we check news from Wisconsin Public Radio and National Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are broadcasting on location in La Crosse this morning at Hackberry's Bistro above the People's Food Co-op. Good morning, La Crosse. Well, as you can hear, we have a nice audience here having breakfast and drinking coffee and talking politics and the election issues that will determine who we vote for in election 2016. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. If you'd like to join us on location, raise your hand. We'll get over to you. You can also call us if you are listening on the radio, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We will have with us for the rest of this hour one of our regular political analysts from La Crosse, and we will focus in on a few of the issues making news on the campaign trail, especially the news this week about the hikes in premiums with the Affordable Care Act and how this is going to affect the election. And we wonder if you think this health care law is working well enough. Do you think it maybe needs some tweaks, or should it be repealed and replaced, as many of the Republican politicians are calling for now? Joining me now is Joe Heim, a professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
Thanks for being here. Last time I saw you in person, I was on the road in Onalaska in 2008, so it's been a while.
It has been a while. I'm glad you're back.
It's good to be back. So how big an issue do you think this Affordable Care Act premium hike is going to be?
It's become one of the major issues of the campaign, I think, for a number of both state and federal. It really, however, only affects a certain number of people, but it does have an image of being a drag on the Democratic ticket overall, because I think there's been a lot of criticism of Obamacare over the years. And I think this news that just came this last week about increases across the country certainly is, for the Democrats, it's not good timing.
Well, we found a news story that said that the premium hikes are not likely to be a major issue for the majority of Americans because most people receive federal subsidies, which are also going up. That would make up in part for the premium hike. In fact, the Department of Health and Human Services says 84% of Obamacare buyers receive subsidies, so it may not be a game changer, but you're saying that it still might be a drag on Democrats.
Yeah, nationally, I think it's around 25%, although I think if you listen to Republicans, they're talking 50, 60%. In some places, they're cherry-picking certain numbers. Wisconsin is considerably less, and it has to do with two things, but one, if a general person in Wisconsin with health insurance, their rates are going to go up about 3 to 5% this year. That's just the general insurance. The Obamacare is about 17% on average, so it's lower than the national average. I think for that reason, it's a little less of an issue here.
Why are those premiums going up double digits in some places?
I think in general, I'm not an expert in healthcare, by the way, Joy, but I think in general it has a lot to do with just overall costs of medical costs going up. And particularly, there are something like one-third fewer insurance companies willing to cover the Obamacare exchanges. And because there's fewer competition, a lot of them have found out that it's costing them more than they expected. A lot of older people are now on it. A lot of other people that previously couldn't afford insurance but had health problems are now on it. And all of that has driven up the cost. And a lot of insurance companies have simply said, no thanks. Minnesota across the river here, for example, is a lot worse off than we are. They're down to just a couple exchange alternatives. And frankly, their rates are going up substantially higher.
Well, Donald Trump used the occasion to call on... to call the Affordable Care Act a disaster. He once again called for repealing it and replacing it. Are you expecting that Republicans will get extra fired up to repeal and replace?
I think it's always been an issue on their side. They've always thought of Obamacare as being a terrible government takeover of health care. Frankly, it's not. If you know your history, you go back about 15, 20 years, and it, in fact, was a Heritage Foundation plan originally. Romney was supportive of it, basically. So it's kind of gotten lost in history, but it's gotten a bad rap. The problem is, in some ways, even though health care costs has gone up and Obamacare has gone up, we don't. It's very hard to compare it to anything. You know, are you comparing it to what? Because you don't know what would have happened without Obamacare. So depends on what side you're on as to whether or not Obamacare is or isn't really a good idea.
Yeah. Democrats, including President Obama, Hillary Clinton, former President Bill Clinton, and others have said that the Affordable Care Act, for the most part, is working well for most people, that you know the issue of rising premiums is specifically focused on a minority of consumers, and focus on the good that the Affordable Care Act has accomplished since being in place. Is that going to resonate?
Oh, I think it does. Especially with Democrats, I think the idea of covering people, millions of people who otherwise wouldn't be covered, is an important factor. And there are some individual parts of Obamacare, such as taking care of younger people. And up until, I think, age 26, prior health issues, I think it's an important factor. So it really depends a little bit about what party you're on in this whole thing.
Wade on Facebook writes, it should be modified into Medicare for all with the ability to negotiate prices for drugs and services. My family's premium is jumping over 250% in 2017. This is nuts. The ACA may have covered more people, but that is changing as premiums escalate. There are the out-of-pockets, which are so prohibitive that one cannot afford to use their insurance. So more people really aren't covered. This is a terrible situation. So yes, repeal or morph into Medicare for all. How about that?
Well, that was one of the alternatives they could have gone to. As opposed to the Obamacare plan, they could have just taken Medicare and expanded it to those people. Why they didn't do it, I'm not sure. I'm kind of naive about this, Joy, but I assume that Congress often passes bills. And like anything, it's sausage. You know, you're putting together the things, and you have a lot of things in there that I think it was 1,800 pages, if I remember right. So every congressman, senator that was interested in something threw it into the thing. I assumed that it was going to be fixed after it was in place for a couple of years. It's typical for Congress to pass something, and a year or two later realize there's some problems in it, and you modify that. Unfortunately, in 2010, the Republicans took over Congress, and it wasn't a matter of just modifying Obamacare. It was a matter of replacing it or eliminating it, frankly. And it's become a cause celeb for that party, frankly. So instead of repairing it like we normally do with the legislation in this country, it's all or nothing.
Yeah, generally, do the Republicans offer what the replacement is going to be?
No, that's the problem. I've heard some plans, but nothing really complete. They talk about a repeal and replace, but the people that are talking about that rarely talk about exactly what the replacement would be. It's certainly not going to be the same.
Some Republicans and others have said that Obamacare was designed to fail, that this was by design so that when it collapsed, that then single payer would be adopted. Do you believe in that conspiracy theory?
I think some people believe it, certainly. You know, you'd have to know what's in the hearts of the people that passed it, because it was, frankly, a giant mess. I think it was a mess, frankly, when they passed it originally, but I figured, as I said, I thought they'd repair it. But the assumption of a single payer plan, I just don't think you'd ever get that through Congress right now. I'm not sure when it would ever pass, but that certainly was a hope in the case of some people. Bernie Sanders used that as one of his major issues this spring, and it was very effective amongst liberal Democrats.
We are talking with Joe Heim, a professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse, talking with him about some of the issues making news on the presidential campaign trail this week, and one of those is the hike in premiums for the Affordable Care Act and how that is playing out politically. I welcome your input. If you have a view on this, do you think that this is a winner as a political issue or a loser? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Are you among those who think that Obamacare should be repealed and replaced? And if so, replaced with what? Or do you think that the Affordable Care Act just needs some tweaks and it does not need to be repealed? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. And if you're here on location with us at Hackberry Bistro above the People's Food Co-op in La Crosse, you can raise your hand and one of our producers will come over to you with a microphone. Donald Trump said this week that he is going to need some help getting rid of Obamacare in the form of Republican House members and senators. He urged his supporters at a rally in Florida to vote for down-ballot Republicans to help get his agenda passed. Normally, presidential candidates don't have to worry too much about their down-ballot peers, but how big of a problem is this for Donald Trump, if it is a problem?
This is one of the interesting issues of the election in this fall, whether or not somebody should or shouldn't be a supporter of Obama, of Trump, to what degree. Some of those people that withdrew their support from him, as I'm sure you know, got a backlash from some of the pro-Trump people. So it's most Republicans are there between a rock and a hard place on this one. And some of them are straddling the issue of saying I'll vote for him, but I won't support him, or I'll support him, but I won't endorse him, all of which makes it very difficult to play the game exactly how you're going to deal with that. But some of this has to do with just how far down the ballot a voter goes. Let's say you're a strong supporter of Donald Trump. You might go in there and just vote for president and walk out. You may know that as typically, if you look at numbers, further down the ballot you go, the numbers actually start dropping in terms of overall percentage of voting. So a lot of people simply go in and vote for the president or maybe the Senate, and then they'll sort of get out because it's taking too long.
Democrats, including Hillary Clinton, yeah, and President Obama, have been attacking the down-ballot Republicans for supporting Donald Trump, especially after that audio recording from 2005 surfaced of Trump bragging about...
Joy, one of the interesting little wrinkles about Wisconsin is, let's say 3 or 4 years ago, you used to be able to vote straight party ticket. So if it was that, at that time, you'd walk in and make one mark and Trump would get a vote and all the rest of the Republicans down the ballot. That is gone. The Republicans removed that out of the laws in Wisconsin, so you cannot vote straight ticket anymore. Strangely enough, this is now going to hurt them more than it will the Democrats.
Did they remove that because they thought that benefited the Democrats?
Yes, to be blunt. there's a perception and some statistical support that more Democrats voted straight party ticket than Republicans. So that was one of the reforms that the Republicans pushed, and then, frankly, it's coming back to bite them.
Well, talk some what you think about the top of the ticket Democrats criticizing the down ballot Republicans for supporting Donald Trump or not, you know, pulling their support for Donald Trump.
Yeah, it's an easy thing to do because Donald Trump is so unpopular. He may be getting 40-45% of the national vote, but people that say, you know, favorable, unfavorable, he's in his 60% range of negatives. So it's a relatively safe thing for a Democrat to do is to attack people supporting him because he's so unpopular. And why are you supporting such an unpopular person and the public doesn't like him, basically, when, in fact, you should stand up and be patriotic and courageous and essentially support the majority of people who don't like him.
In Wisconsin, conservative columnist George Will had a piece with the headline, Republican Senate Hopes May Rest with Wisconsin's Ron Johnson. polls have showed that Feingold, Russ Feingold, has had a pretty sizable lead, but they've been narrowing lately. How important is the race between Johnson and Feingold in the context of which party will control the U.S. Senate?
It's one of the five or six premier races in the country. It's part of the reason outside money is flowing into Wisconsin. Actually, I expect it even more. I think part of the reason it hasn't happened is because Feingold has held a consistent lead. But this is, if the Democrats want to take over, they have to pick up four, if not five, seats. And they're down to about six or seven seats that are still contestable across the country. But they almost have to sweep the board. Some of the rating systems say that the odds that the Democrats carry the Senate are slightly above 50%, around 60% or so odds. In other words, 50-50 would be a normal amount. So this is one of those races. If the Republicans can maintain control of that seat and not lose it, it makes their chances of holding on the Senate all that much better.
So talk a little bit more about that. I've been seeing that it is leaning toward the Democrats taking over the control of the U.S. Senate. Is that still the case?
Yes. It's at least I look at some of the things like Nate Silver's website, and I think he still rates the Democrats as being more favorable to taking over the U.S. Senate.
Yeah.
But you have to look at the individual races around the country to see exactly which ones are still contested, which are off the table.
Yeah. There was also an article in The Hill about how next month's House leadership votes could potentially spell trouble for House Speaker Paul Ryan. It mentioned the possibility of a smaller House majority in the feuds between Ryan and Donald Trump. Is Paul Ryan in any trouble here?
I'd say yes and no. Yes, to the degree that Donald Trump and some of the Trump supporters would like to see him removed. They have made no bones about that, frankly. They said to the very conservative Trump supporters and House of Representatives, it's time to get rid of Ryan. On the other hand, there aren't a lot of options and alternatives to that, basically. So I don't see him. I think, and by the way, I don't think he took this job because he wanted it. I think he took the job because his party asked him to do it. And I don't think they have an alternative automatically that's going to be able to take over. So they may, in fact, lose some seats, which is not. If Hillary Clinton carries the country, she's probably going to bring some House of Representatives with her, but very unlikely that she's going to pick up 30 seats. So he'll have a slightly diminished margin, and typically what you might do is blame the leader of a particular House, Assembly, or Senate for losing seats. But in this case, I don't think that's going to happen. I think the degree that seats are lost, it won't be because of Paul Ryan, it'll be because of Donald Trump.
Well, we have some callers who want to talk about health care. I don't know if we... we'll try to take one before news. Becky in Hustisford is with us. Hi, Becky.
Hello there, Joy. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to give a brief example. I live in a very conservative county where both Badger Care and the Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare, as they call it, are frowned on. But I was a small business owner in an engineering services company that is very dependent on the housing industry. The difficulty of the economy and the downturn in our business meant we not only lost our health care, but our marriage fell apart. I wound up going through a divorce. I also then lost my source of income because I no longer had the job with our business. I wound up patching together part-time jobs, as I'm still doing now. I wound up going on Badger Care for a while, but it was reorganized so many times that kept losing my documents, my information, and I lost
Badger
Care. So,
Becky, the Affordable Care Act has been very important to you.
It has been very important. I went without insurance for over a year and could not afford it, even though the Affordable Health Care Act may be a mess, but it is the only way that I can afford health insurance.
Thank you, Becky, for calling in. We'll get Professor Joe Heim to react to that after we check news from National Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are on location in La Crosse. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are broadcasting on location at Hackberry's Bistro above the People's Food Co-op in La Crosse, Wisconsin. This is a part of our Wisconsin Vote on the Road tour. We are touring the state to hear from listeners and voters and guests from different regions of the state. Today we are in La Crosse, and we invite our on-location audience to join in our discussions. We invite you to come to Hackberry's Bistro and have a cup of coffee and watch the rest of the show if you would like to. We also invite you to call in at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Talking about some of the major issues making news on the campaign trail this week with Joe Heim, a professor of political science at UW-La Crosse. We were talking about how the hikes in premiums for the Affordable Care Act, how that's playing out politically. And I was asking whether or not listeners thought that it was time to repeal Obamacare or replace it or tweak it or keep it just the way it is, whether you think it's been a good law or whether you think it has been a bad law. We heard from Becky in Hustisford just before our news break, who said that Obamacare, in essence, was a lifesaver for her. Are there enough people like that, Joe Heim, do you think, to keep it in place?
Well, yeah, I think there is. It's one of those things that there are some things that are good, some things are bad, like anything. 224,000 people in Wisconsin have health care that otherwise wouldn't have it. I see that as a real plus. The negatives are there. Absolutely knows it. But for God's sakes, fix it. It would seem to me a very common sense thing to keep the parts that are good, get rid of the parts that are bad, and improve it, basically. And I think the country would be all better off.
Well, there you go. Are you going to run for office pretty soon, Joe Heim?
No, I'm not. The interesting thing, this has actually come down to even like assembly level and state senate races.
How so?
Whether or not the governor took the Medicaid benefits, the federal benefits, and whether that was a good or bad idea. Whether or not Badger Care Plus is covering sufficient number of people. These have actually become local issues in Wisconsin.
Yeah, he decided not to take that federal money to expand Medicare. What did that do to Wisconsin?
It seems to me, I'm not sure the exact dollar amounts we're talking about, probably in excess of $1 billion loss of money over the years. For the governor to say, and I know this sounds a little bit Democratic, but the governor to say that you can't trust the federal government to continue a program and for that reason not to accept that money just doesn't strike me as the right thing to do. The governor of Ohio accepted the money for a variety of good reasons. John Kasich, I thought his logic was much clearer. But for the governor basically to pass up that money simply because it might get cut off in the future, there's a lot of programs you could drop if that was the case.
Yeah. So what are Democrats proposing, those that are proposing that it be fixed rather than repealed? How can you fix these double-digit hikes in some cases?
I think part of it has to do with whether you do the federal or the state issue. You know, whether or not, for example, one of the things that Donald Trump suggests is that the borders of the state should not be an important factor, and I agree with that. When you have separate, you know, one state has only one option and other states have five options, it seems to me that that's an area that ought to be fixed. There ought to be more of a nationalization of the whole thing. In other words, allowing a broader number of competition. I think increased competition would, in fact, help this a lot. But I think the federal government has to encourage that competition. It can't just be left to the marketplace or companies decide to stay in or stay out.
I believe we have a caller. Joe in Lake Geneva has been waiting. Hi, Joe. You're on the air.
Hi, Joe. Enjoy. Hi. I'm a person that has a piece of information. There was a health insurance risk-sharing pool, HIRSP program, created about 10 years ago by the state of Wisconsin. It worked wonderfully. It was for people whose insurance companies had gone out of health care, like Mutual of Omaha, which happened to me, or people who could not get insurance. You simply had to show you had been turned down for insurance by two companies for whatever reason. You got your insurance through the state. It was not Badger Care. It was a premium-based thing. You were rated on your age. It ran at a profit. The first year it operated about 8 years ago, everyone got a refund. And when it was closed out by Governor Walker, incredibly, why he did that is beyond me. It had nothing to do with really Obamacare, except that I think he didn't understand how it worked. I got a refund check of $350. That was a pool of people, that, and whoever ran that should be interviewed by the press. He was obviously fired by the state when Governor Walker got rid of it. But Walker could have used that program as a template and been a star in the Republican Party, probably. But he didn't even understand it. So they threw it away, and then he didn't want the federal money you talked about with Obamacare. But it might be a template to look at if the press or some people look at this a little more knowledgeable in the insurance industry to see how did that work. A profit? For heaven's sake.
Thank you very much, Joe. So any reaction to that, Joe?
Well, it's, it reflects on the politicization of the whole thing. Healthcare should not be a partisan issue, in my opinion. And I think the parties, frankly, ought to get together and work this out for the common good of the country as a whole, not just be absolutely for it or against it. You know, one of the weird things about Affordable Care Act and Obamacare, if you ask people about Obamacare, the number of percentage of people who don't like it are higher than the number of people that don't like Affordable Care Act. In other words, the name itself seems to have become a negative and a partisan issue. It really shouldn't be.
So how do you see this playing out?
It depends on who wins the presidency. I would think if Donald Trump becomes the next president in Congress, in other words, is held by the Republicans, I think you're going to see a substantial change in Obamacare, if not totally eliminating it. When the House of Representatives passed, over 50 times to try to eliminate Obamacare, you wondered exactly what was the purpose of all that. But on the other hand, if Hillary Clinton became president, I think she would veto any types of major changes that or elimination that that the House of Representatives tried to do, even if the Senate was willing to go along as well.
We are talking about the Affordable Care Act and the premium hikes this week and how that's playing out politically on the campaign trail, not just the presidential campaign trail, but it's playing out on races for Congress and Senate and even state legislature. We have a few more minutes for you if you'd like to join in, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. And if you would like to join us from our audience on location at Hackberry's Bistro, you can raise your hand and we'll get somebody over to you. Well, I'm going to take another call. Jean in Eau Claire is with us next. Hi, Jean. You're on the air.
Good morning. I just wanted to call in response to the person that called and spoke about HIRSP, H-I-R-S-P, that was in our state of Wisconsin. I happen to have had to go on to that program with a disability. It was very, very expensive, and it didn't cover a lot of things. And I got to say that Obamacare is the best thing that ever happened in our state and, you know, took away the discrimination, you know, with pre-existing conditions, you know, and everybody's covered and you can't be denied. I knew of so many people losing their insurances and insurances not covering what they said they would cover in the first place. And oh, it was a bad situation, and Obamacare is the best thing that's ever happened in my life, and I just wanted to shed some light on HIRSP. It was not a good program for somebody that really needed health care.
All right. Thanks very much. So at least our callers so far are fans of the Affordable Care Act. And again, you think that is the country split on whether it is or not?
Very much so. I think the last statistics I've seen, the last poll I saw, showed a majority of people generally were not favorable. I don't know the exact way of saying it, but they're not favorable to Obamacare. It's gotten so much negative publicity over the years. You hear people cherry-picking the bad stuff. For example, the person that called earlier saying that their premiums went up a couple hundred percent. If you knew the details about that, you'd understand that that was probably a very unique situation. I'll go with a natural number, 17% or so in Wisconsin, which is relatively low, 25% nationally, which is certainly scares a lot of people, especially before a national election. But the reality is those scare stories simply are not the norm. And we don't really know exactly what would have happened if we had not had a version of Obamacare.
Professor Heim, you said earlier that the future of Obamacare depended largely on who wins the presidential election.
We had Reince Priebus in Wisconsin this week saying that Wisconsin is still winnable for Donald Trump, despite some polls that have showed Hillary Clinton in the lead. What's your assessment of the race in Wisconsin in particular? Is this one that's still up for grabs?
I think it's a lot closer than people realize. I think nationally, the polls, a lot of the polls that had Hillary Clinton 5-6 percentage points ahead, I think it's going to, as is typically the case, things narrow towards the end of the election. There's undecideds out there. Hillary Clinton is perceived by some people as the status quo person, even though she's not. Donald Trump is a change candidate, and the public wants change, frankly, and that's a real advantage for Donald Trump. So I expect the undecideds a little more to go to him than to her. Secondarily, as we get closer to the election, the people voting for Johnson or for Jill Klein are going to drift away from them and move towards one of the top two candidates. And that's why I think it's basically going to be a closer election than people realize.
Yeah. And what about for U.S. Senate?
I was going to say if I had to put my money on one, I'd do that. I think I'll skip that line.
You don't want to lose any money, yeah.
Yeah, I think the polls over time have showed Feingold to be consistently ahead. And unless Donald Trump is correct about a secret number of people who have never voted before, particularly talking about white males that are his strong supporters, if they come out in force, they could surprise a lot of people in a lot of states. Whether that's true or not, pollsters have been trying to find those people to make sure they're included in the polls. But whether or not, we'll find out on Election Day whether, in fact, there's a large number of people that are going to get out for Trump that had never previously voted.
Very briefly, as we only have about 30 seconds to go, do you think that state Democrats might take back the state Senate or not?
To be honest, I think the odds are a little bit against that. If you look at the actual numbers, you're talking about one or two seats of the Senate could go to Democrats. The real trick is to find the third or fourth seat. They have to take three in order to take over, and I think the odds are a little bit against them at this point.
Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Joy.
Joe Heim is a professor of political science at UW-La Crosse. Stay with us. We'll continue our live broadcast from Hackberry's Bistro on above the People's Co-op in La Crosse after we check the news. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.